Yeah, this is in a sense continuation of a presentation that we did about a year ago. We did a presentation on how the energy markets and how the basic principles of how energy markets work. That was together with Peter Vincent from Ontario Power Generation and Matt Davison from the University of Western Ontario, who's in the audience. We concentrated on the working of the market. And this is concentrating on one part of the generation, hydroelectric. And the picture I put up here is a very nice, romantic, and idyllic picture of hydro production. And I would have really, really liked to continue with this and say the problem that I'm trying to solve, hydroelectric dispatch, and the next slide should have been a similar rosy picture saying that this is the mathematical that we use to solve these problems. Alas, this is not the case. As you've seen from Rick's presentation, hydro comes in all shapes, sorts, and sizes, and each facility is very, very different than any other facility, and you have to take into account the particularities of one particular site and the interaction it has with everything else on the system. But having said that, hydro is actually a very interesting area to work in, and particularly lately there's lots of new things coming on. As you may have seen in the news, there's a piece in the Globe and Mail yesterday about the Conewapa project in northern Manitoba. The idea is to strengthen the east-west tie and basically get some hydro energy from Manitoba. And this is not small fry. The generating capacity that is on offer would be somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 megawatts. And we're talking about an investment of several billion dollars here. So this is one end of the hydro spectrum. This is supposed to come into service around 2020. And like this is one of the problems that that we looked at in our group. At the other end of the spectrum, like this presentation is just about hydro using water as a fuel. And you might think that we can just take hydro itself and do our optimization, whatever we want to optimize and on hydro itself, but hydro itself is used to drive different things. You have like the hydro facilities like the Beck complex, you have the pump storage, and there is an interaction with fossil plants and nuclear plants. And all that then in the end generates electricity. And I won't even go into the difficulties that transmission gives or forecasting load. But in itself, the planning of hydro, like I said, you have a time scale from like decades, like the Conewapa project, on how should you price the electricity that comes out of that, what should we pay for it, what is the impact on our system. This is planning about 20 years from now, so that's this end of the scale. And at the other end of the scale, you have the dispatch itself to balance the system on a 5-minute basis. If the load fluctuates, then what should we additionally dispatch to basically meet that load? This is a problem how hydro is actually used to do this at this time scale. 1 hour day, 1 hour and 5 minutes. That's a problem that Renendra is going to talk about. And what I'm going to focus on is sort of the bit in between, a week, a month, and a day. Okay. Let's look at all our generation. Look, we have fossil, nuclear, and hydro. The nuclear plants, we've got two nuclear plants here. We've got our fossil plants, we've got Nanticoke, Lambton, Lennox, Atikokan, and Thunder Bay. And the rest, every single line there is a hydro facility. So in a sense, running nuclear is, no nuclear folks in the audience, is fairly easy. It either runs or it doesn't. And if it doesn't run, you're in big trouble. You've got fossil stations. It's a bit more complicated there. They run, or they can be derated. They can run at half the capacity or 75% capacity, or they can be out. But hardware itself, you've got a whole range of possibilities. You have like a four bay, you've got a dam, and as long as you've got fuel available, you can produce any amount that you want in any increments. It's very, very flexible, and because of that flexibility, it's very valuable. But all of these are used to feed into the electricity system in Ontario. So it is to say, okay, we're going to optimize production at this site. You cannot really do that because it has an impact on what all the other sites can produce and should produce. So from a dispatch perspective, on a longer time scale, this is a very, very complex problem. Okay. Let me give you some monetary values. This is from our business report in 2006, which you can download from our website. In terms of production, last year our nuclear production took 44%, fossil 24%, and hydro was 32%, for a total of about 105 terawatt hours of energy. Now, as Rick mentioned, we have regulated and unregulated assets. Like nuclear is regulated, which means that whatever we produce, we get a fixed price for it, which in 2006 was $49 per megawatt hour. We've got fossil. Fossil is exposed to market prices. And the average that we got last year was $48. And as you will see in a couple of slides, the range that the electricity prices can be in is quite enormous. Now, hydro is a split. We have regulated hydro, such as the Beck plant, and we have unregulated hydro, which are some of the small hydro facilities. And the split is roughly the same as if you look at like Niagara Falls, where you do not have that much capability of storing water from, say, one day to, or say, 1 week to the next week. Basically, if the water is there, you use it, and it's, most of it is, it's a must-run facility. So for the regulated hydro, we get a fixed price of $35 per megawatt. For the unregulated portion, we're exposed to market prices, but it's only 85% of our unregulated fleet is exposed to gets a fixed price, and 15% is exposed to market prices. And on top of that, OPG is owned by the government. We're a crown corporation, and because of that, the government puts quite a bit of constraints on the way we can operate. And one of the overall constraints is we have a revenue cap. We cannot make more than a certain amount of money. So at the end of the year, when we've produced and we say we've done really, really well, the government says, oh, you've done really well. Give me back some of that money. So you cannot maximize all you want in the short term, but at the end of the year, if you do too well, you have to give it back to the government. And if the opposite happens, if we don't make our revenue targets, the government says, oh, you didn't do too well this year, did you? So let's hope you do better next year. And we carry the cost. So these are some more general constraints on our optimization problems. But to actually, just to give you a sense of how much capital or how much money this is 105 terawatt at about $46 per megawatt hour. That's a gross revenue of about $4.6 billion. So bear in mind that I've already indicated that there isn't as much room for like global optimization as I would have liked to, but even 0.1% of $4 billion is a lot of money. Now, you really need to understand how the market works. And if you want to do some price optimization, I suppose you want to move water from 1 hour to another hour where you hope you get a higher price, you really need to understand how the pricing is done. This all works off what is called a generation supply stack. This is what our stack looked like in January of 2006. Basically what we do is, or any generator in the province does, is they submit price quantity pairs, and they say we are willing to produce 50 megawatts for a price of, say, $30. We will supply an additional 10 megawatts, but that is at a price of $55, and if you want 100 megawatts, we will charge you $80. Okay? So all of this whole curve consists of, I think, a total of 2,000 to 3,000 different price quantity pairs. And this represents all the different units that we have available. So this is fossil, this is nuclear and hydro. And one unit can actually bid their production in different laminations. So you have, say, one hydro station that could theoretically produce, say, 100 megawatts. It will break up its production into increments of 10 megawatts, and each of those 10 megawatts will carry a price. And that makes up this stack. As you see at the bottom, you've got nuclear. Now, what nuclear does is it bids in very, very low, because it's very expensive to shut down a nuclear reactor and restart it in a couple of hours or a day later. So basically this curve represents flexibility. These are the least flexible plants, and this is, at this end, the most flexible. So you've got nuclear, you've got the non-utility generation, this would be Bruce Power. We've got the base hydro, which is the must-run hydro facilities. We've got our back complex, we've got our fossil plants, coal, combined cycle gas units. We've got flex hydro. This is flexible hydro where you can decide when to release it. This would be from, say, a reservoir or pump generation station. Then a gas and oil plants. And at this end, you have the really, really high-priced fuels. This is a combustion turbine unit. And you can even go higher up the stacks. There are units which actually run on kerosene, like aircraft fuel. You can imagine what that would cost. Now what happens, so this is the all the generation that's available, and then the IESO sees what the expected demand is. Like in this case, demand would be, say, about 22,000 megawatts for 1 hour. They basically go down the supply stack, pick up the cheapest generation, and says, okay, you guys are producing, and up to this point, where they take half of this offer, and this satisfies all demand. Now, this intersection of this price stack and this quantity then gives you a market clearing price. So at this particular point in time, the market clearing price would have been $35. Okay. Now, the important thing to note is that although nuclear bid in at $5 per megawatt, everybody who's producing gets the market clearing price. So, for instance, Bruce Power, if they bid in at $5, they would get $35 as the market clearing price. This is in an idealized setting. Of course, we are a regulated entity, so the government says, although, well, market price is $35, we're going to give you the regulated price. Okay? But this is basically how this works. Now, you can see what like the bidding strategy of how you offer your production into the market has a big impact on whether you run or not. So you've got your you've got your must-run hydro, and you say, well, I actually think it's worth $40, not $10. So you offer it in at $40, and if the market clearing price is $35, then the operator says, well, you bid too high, you're not running. Now, for a must-run facility, we have no way to store the water at Beck. So what you end up doing is spilling. So you've wasted all the money that's inherent in this water. So therefore, you want to bid as low as possible. At this end, the flex water, this is a very valuable resource because you can release it anytime you want. So if you bid this in too low, then you're going to deplete this resource fairly rapidly. If you bid it in too high, then it will never ever get touched, and you don't realize the value that's in in this water. Okay. So this is some of the pricing issues, and also what is really important is the relationship of this to all the other generators. Imagine what happens if we offer a hydro at $2 and nuclear is bidding at $5. And we have low demand, say we have about 10,000 megawatts. What will happen is the IESO picks the cheapest generator, which in this case would be hydro, and then says, okay, I've now satisfied all my demand, nuclear, you're not running. Then nuclear plant has to shut down because there's a lot of costs associated with shutting down nuclear, and to get it back up and running again is very expensive and takes a long time. So our bidding strategy is not optimized for one single unit. It has to take into account all the other units and what the effect of our bidding strategy for one unit is on all the other units. Okay. I mean, life would be pretty simple if we just had the Beck complex. Then, I mean, who cares about nuclear if somebody else runs it, or the coal-fired units if somebody else runs it? If we just had Beck hydro to optimize, then life would be pretty simple. But we have lots and lots of different facilities, and also OPG is a big company. We supply about 70 to 80% of the energy in the province. So what we do more or less makes the market. Okay. Let's look at the basic hydro types, because this is connected to some of the different models that you would apply to do any optimization you would want to do. First type is dam storage. So basically you have a big dam, water flows in, and you can just store it for as long as you want, and you release it whenever it's opportune to do so. Now you have very, very different types. The water storage and release cycles, they can range from very short, like a couple of hours or days, to very long, seasonal or multi-seasonal, so multi-year. Like you have some facilities like in the States where they would get sufficient inflows about once every 2, 3, or 4 years, and they just collect all that water and then sit on it for a couple of years and release it when prices are really high. Okay. And you have the other extreme where you could refill, like you have a steady flow and you can refill almost on a daily basis. Okay. Then you have run the river. These are typically low dams where the electricity production is being determined by the water flowing in the river. You don't have that much choice in what to produce and when to produce. It's a river that dictates it. There is a bit of leverage that you can have. And the elevation in the forebay, you can allow that to fluctuate, and that sometimes allows you to shift some water from like off-peak to on-peak hours. And you can capitalize a bit on the price differential, but it's fairly limited. Then you have pump generation storage, where basically you have a reservoir that's filled by using off-peak energy. You pump the water up to a higher reservoir, and you release it during on-peak periods when the prices are high, and you make money that way. And you can have a variety of systems. This can be, like at Beck, we have both run the river and a pump storage combined at the same location. We can even have pump storage where there's no river present. You can have two reservoirs, one at low elevation, one at high elevation. You just pump water from one to the other. You release, and the next day you pump up again. So there's lots and lots of different variations there. Now let's look at the behavior of these things and what sort of mathematical models you would like to apply to this. The dam storage, it's basically an inventory problem. You've got stochastic inflows, and at some point you decide to release an amount of water, and it drops your inventory level to a lower level, and you start accumulating again up to a maximum point. You drop down again, etc., etc. Now, what's driving these points, this is basically a stochastic process, and it's subordinate to a price process. This would be HOEP, Ontario Hourly Electricity Price. This is a strike price that you set, so you offer a certain quantity at this price into the market, and as soon as HOEP hits that boundary, you're called upon to deliver your water. So at this point, you actually exceeded your strike price, but there wasn't enough water in your forebays, so you couldn't produce. this point you just breach it and you release the water, etc., etc. At this part of the cycle, so you probably should have set your strike price a bit lower, because what is happening is you fill up your reservoir to its maximum, and what you're doing here is spilling water, so you're throwing away money. Okay. And this is a very nice picture, because it reminded me of like a classic inventory course that almost everybody takes at university, where you get these diagrams and you derive an economic order quantity and you get some nice formulas and that's it. Okay. Yep. No, but it really doesn't. I mean, it depends on the amount that you offer. If you get a large generating station, you could offer, say, 5 or 10 megawatts. If that gets taken up, then that's almost instantaneously within the course of an hour or so. But if you have this large amount of drawdown, this will probably be over a couple of hours. Yes. Good. And you have the run-of-the-river systems. And, well, here there's very little you can do. The only thing that you need to make sure is that you set your strike price low enough such that this is always or almost always taken up by the ISO. Because if you set this strike price, the price in your PQ pair, too high, then there will be times when your water is not taken up and you have to spill. Okay? But again, how you set this price is determined not just by like the minimum of the HOEP, it's determined by the rest of the generating units, and you want to set it such that it doesn't displace any other units. Okay. Then you have the pump generation storage. And the basic operation of this is a typical profile of HOEP during the course of a day. This is hour one, early morning, up to 7 or 8 o'clock, and then prices start to rise till mid-afternoon, and about 9, 8, 9, 10, it goes down again. So what you want to do is this is a classic arbitrage problem where you buy low and you sell high. So you buy at these hours, you pump it up, this is costing you money, and at a later point in time, you release it and you make money. Of course, the megawatts that you consume pumping it up are not the same as the megawatts you can get by releasing it. So there's a conversion factor there. So that means there's a bit of friction there. And the price differential, if this is just between this and this peak, if it's just, say, $5 or $6 or $10, it's not worth doing this. It's got to be a fairly large price differential. Okay. So these are some of the basic graphs that correspond to these basic hydro types. And if you look at the literature on hydro optimization, almost all of the articles correspond to either one of these three types. Okay. So basically all we need to do is to find some nice mathematical equations, get the relevant constraints, and an objective function to minimize. Okay. Now, I showed part of this presentation to our guys in the control room, who actually control all our units on an hourly basis. It's a control room that's manned 24/7 by about 6 to 7 people, and they decide on an hourly basis what units are running and how do we offer our generation into the market. So I showed it to them, and they sort of looked at me, and the first reaction was they killed themselves laughing. And I mean, and they're absolutely right. So then you start talking to them. I mean, this didn't happen yesterday. This you talk about what mathematical models you're thinking about. You test what is realistic and what isn't. And I mean, they don't fall off a laughing, but after every conversation, they think, "Well, yeah, smart guy, but he doesn't know that much about hydro." So then you go back again, and you learn more and more, and you fine-tune your models, and eventually you say, oh, this could work. This sort of captures the reality. Now, one of the, actually, the, the objections that they voice are, like, you basically want to, in your mathematical model, you want to capture a lot of these things, like the inflows. There's huge uncertainty on inflows. Like every year, there's a big runoff in the mountains, snow melts, and that gives us a big influx of water. It's called freshet. If you can time this, you can make lots of money. If you can't time this, then it's not too good. Because what you need to do is, you get all this extra water, and ideally what you'd like to do is, you'd like to have all your reservoirs empty when this massive influx of water comes in. Because then you fill up the reservoirs and you can maximize your profits afterwards. So what we tend to do is, in anticipation of freshet, we draw down our reservoirs to make room for when freshet arrives. Now, freshet is not very reliable. Sometimes it can be a couple of weeks late or a couple of weeks early. So if you draw down too quickly, then you deplete your hydro reserves, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting for freshet, and finally it comes in, and you've missed a lot of opportunities in the meantime. If you wait too long, then you don't have room for all the water that flows in, and you have to spill. So these are some very, very interesting optimization problems. And every river has its own characteristics and different times when the inflow will happen and volumes. And this is a really complex problem. Then, even if you have steady flows, if you don't have fresh air, like if you look at the Niagara complex, you have large interannual fluctuations. Okay, the Beck complex, we did a study on, let's see, some revenue forecasts on Beck over the next couple of years. And part of it is like a forecast on price, and part of it is a forecast on what the expected production could be, basically the flows. And it really depends on what time frame you take to calibrate your model on. If you take 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, or 90 years, you get very, very different answers. So the comment that I made earlier saying, what do you want as a number, and I'll give you the model that provides it, is not too far-fetched. Okay. Then, on top of that, you have uncertainty of price. You have seasonal patterns. The price in January or March or April is very different than in August during the hot summer months when everybody's turning on the air conditioning. You have daily patterns. The electricity use on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is very different than in the weekend, and the prices are different. You have diurnal patterns, patterns within the day. As I showed earlier, that one graph, the prices at the first hours of the day, like up to hour 6, 7, are very low. Then they climb, and then they go down again at nighttime. And you have infrequent but very large price spikes if demand doesn't match the generation that's available. Basically, what happens then is, so if the ISO planned for a demand of 22,000, it's a very hot summer day, all of a sudden everybody turns on their air conditioning, and demand soars up to 26,000-27,000 megawatts, which happened about a year and a half ago. So all of a sudden, rather than 435, you end up with prices of like $70-$80 per megawatt hour. It could also be that something happens to one of our nuclear units and you lose 200-400 megawatts. So basically what that means is this disappears, this whole curve shifts to the left, and you're going to hit these high prices as well. So these spikes occur infrequently, but they're very, very significant. And on top of that, you have stack effects. You cannot price a unit without taking into consideration the effect it has on our other generating units. So if you optimize on just one unit, you can make like a couple of $1,000 there, but if you displace nuclear or some other large generating unit, you lose a lot on those units. So the only way you can do this is by looking at the entire set of units that we have available. So before you have any credibility, you need to address all of these issues. And there's no way that you can do this with just one big mathematical model. Okay. Even if you take away this part where you just look at the height, at the water that you have currently, just trying to optimize that. You're trying to optimize this against the uncertainty of price, and you got to take into account the SAC effects. Now, just to give you a sense of the uncertainty in price, this is the electricity price over the last 4 years. This is 2003 to the end of 2006. You can see occasionally we had price spikes of up to $500, $600, or $700. Okay. And this is because there's a mismatch between demand and capacity. So demand and, and generation available, which could either be because the ISO didn't do a good job in forecasting demand, or a large unit dropped off and you create a price spike in that fashion. But having said that, there is a lot of regularity in HOAP. This is the first month of 2003. And you can see it goes up, goes down, and basically these are 24-hour cycles. There's a couple of weekends in here, and you get occasionally these higher prices. So there is something you can do. There's a lot of regularity in here, and this is if you were to average this, you get this intraday pattern that I showed you earlier. Then you can actually optimize on that. Now, if I take the average over 2006, this is my typical price pattern. Okay. So I start off at 1 o'clock in the morning at about $35. You go down and people start waking up, 6, 7. You got a small peak just around midday, and you've got a peak around 4 or 5 o'clock. And then it goes down again. So if you have pump generation storage, what you want to do is you buy at, say, $30 to $35 prices, you keep it for a couple of hours, and you release it at about $50, $60. Okay? So once I had a question, I said, okay, well, this is fine, but occasionally you have these really high prices, like $200. You really, really want to be maximizing on that. Now, let me show you what that looks like. This is the average over all the days in 2006. And these are all the different price patterns. So each line, this line is one particular day in 2006. The morning price was about 140, it went down, etc. And somewhere it finds its way through and then ends up at this point. Okay, so this is the average, and you can see a huge variability that you have in this. So if you're trying to maximize on, like you're waiting for this really, really big event of $300, $400, $500 happening, and you want to make that, it's very, very difficult to predict. Okay? So these are some of the comments that the operators in the control room are making, and you have to convince them that whatever model that you present is taking care of all these issues. Okay. Otherwise, you have no credibility whatsoever. Now, as you hopefully have seen from this previous diagram, like chasing HOAP for the big payoff does not work. It's similar to, like, you may have some friends who say they've done really well in the stock market. Every day they look at the newspapers and they pick the stock they think is going to win, and they trade and trade and trade, and at the end of the year, you ask them how much money they've made, and they probably lost more on commissions than they've gained on their portfolio. Whereas a more prudent investor who just picks a set of good stocks and keeps with them, and at the end of the year they have a steady return. So if you chase the big payoff, you may get lucky, but you lose many smaller opportunities to make profit. Okay? So this is more an incentive to, rather than looking at all the uncertainties around the HOAP and trying to maximize the extreme on the extreme values, you try to figure out some reasonable operating policy and you stick with it. And this also minimizes the wear and tear on the machines and also on the operators, because you don't want them every single day to follow a different schedule. Okay. Now the flex water. Again, you could price this on the extremes, but this is very, very tricky. because if you price this at the end of the price curve, if you have a year where there isn't a heat wave, there isn't that much demand, you have lots of hydro, you cannot get very high prices. And if prices go really high, if you have a heat wave and less water, you get really high prices. But to predict if they're going to be $200, $300, $400, $500, $600 is very, very difficult. So what we do is we price the flex water conservatively on a contingency basis. We basically look at what's the worst thing that can happen over the, say, next week, and what is the corresponding price that electricity would fetch in that case. And this is what we set as a minimum price. And this is a trade-off between basically keeping a valuable asset available for emergencies. Because if hydro wasn't available for these emergencies, what would happen is HOP would go through the roof. Okay. And it's also obeying our shareholder mandate, because technically we could price our water at $1,000, $2,000. If this happens, if a day or 2 days we hit flex water and the prices are $1,000, $2,000, it'd be all over the newspapers, and the government will say, what the hell are you guys doing? Also, if you offer flex water at $2,000, it may get taken up if there's an emergency, but it may only run for 5 minutes. So you make $1,000 or $2,000 for 5 minutes, whereas if you would have priced that at, say, $400, which is reasonable for emergencies, you may have run that at 20 minutes or half an hour. Okay? Because you don't want to price it too low, because then it will always get taken up and you don't realize all the value. Then a pump storage, that's basically done on a replenishment basis with a minimum offer price. So we basically, we want to replenish our reservoir, and we do this at the lowest priced hours, usually the night. And we fill it up at definitely at the weekend, like Sunday night is very, very low prices. So we use that and fill up our reservoirs. And then once we have that, we have a minimum offer price, and as soon as that gets hit, then we're happy with that, and we make a profit on the on that water. Okay. Again, you don't want to set this too high, because if it doesn't get taken up, you lose revenues for 1 day. So it might be better to have a lower price and make money every day than have a higher price and make money only once every 2 days. Okay. Now, where this all comes together is we basically submit all these price quantity pairs. We do this on an hourly basis. We start making these schedules the rough draft is about a month ahead. We refine this when it gets closer to dispatch. So when we get about a day or 2 days away, we have a daily schedule, and all these daily schedules are then refined to hourly schedules. And these are then submitted to the ISO every hour for all our generating units, and this is done 3 hours in advance. So we break up all our generation in terms of PQ pairs, and there's several thousand that are submitted every single hour for running in 3 hours hence. Okay. So up to 3 hours before, we can still modify. Now, basically what we do is we submit schedules 24 hours ahead. So if this is hour one, we submit PQ pairs for hour four up to hour 25. Okay. Hour four, we cannot change, because that's the final bit. But we have, at least for the hours afterwards, we already have a schedule in place. If for whatever reason we cannot communicate our new schedules, then whatever we offered is taken as that price. But of course, things happen during that the course of that hour, and the operators move water around to maximize price and revenue. Okay. But this is a very complex problem. So every hour, the operators look at all up price quantity pairs, and they maneuver, and they do this based on past experience, and such that it doesn't affect anything else in the stack. Because you can move water, the price on a particular unit of water. If that means that you hit the price of another unit, you're going to displace that unit. And the revenue implications might be quite large. Okay. And again, this 3-hour lock-in, you have to 3 hours before you cannot change your prices and quantities anymore. That means if you want to do HOP forecasting, you need to forecast 3 hours ahead. Okay? So even if you can forecast accurately what HOP the next hour will be, it's no good. You need to do this 3 hours in advance.